Okay, and also hello to wonderful people online. So everyone who's online, they can see you here in the Gompa. It's been a long time between Vajrasattvas, hasn't it? Yes, I just thought we could just do a quick check-in and see how we're going and if anyone has anything to share. The last time we all got together, I think, was over our Christmas retreat. And so I did spend a bit of my holidays editing the Christmas. So if you remember, everything's there in either the sound files, in the sound files area under various different sections. But also lots of you, just for convenience, bought a package, and so that's in catch-up files. Let's just take a moment to set our motivation and then we can check in how we're going. So the two-part posture, to have a fairly straight spine so that you feel alert, your spine feels strong and stable. And then you can relax your body, especially release any tension from the shoulders, the neck and the shoulders. Take a nice couple of deep breaths to make sure that you're not just breathing from the top of your lungs, but breathing deeply. And also make sure that your chin is pulled inwards, head just slightly tilted forward. Jaw relaxed, tongue on the upper palate behind the top teeth. Eyes just slightly open so some light comes in. And relax all the muscles on the face. And then if you can, hands in the lap, right palm on top of left. So this reminds us that it is the wisdom that supports the compassionate activity and the skillful means. The two thumbs touching, lightly touching, symbolizing the two truths. And the elbows just a little out from the torso. They say like the wings of a bird about to take flight. So you feel ready to engage in the evening. And once our posture is adjusted, then we can adjust our motivation. And remember why we're here. All the various reasons that are usually quite immediate or personal that bring us here. And so then extending our focus, extending our heart to include all living beings. And to include bringing them the ultimate benefit, not just a band-aid benefit, but to be able to bring all the suffering sentient beings out of suffering and into a lasting state of happiness, into Vajrasattva's enlightenment, and nothing less. So His Holiness's prayer to generate bodhicitta, with the wish to free all beings, we shall always go for refuge to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha until we reach full enlightenment. Inspired by wisdom and compassion, today in the Buddha's presence, we generate the mind of full awakening for the benefit of all sentient beings. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, until then may we too remain and dispel the miseries of the world. Let's hear from the people in the room first. How are we going? Who was here? Oh, okay, so Dean, you said to me that you liked the Christmas retreat and you were able to come. That was good.
Yep.
What was it that you liked about the Christmas retreat?
It was just a good consolidation of what we've been doing, and for me, I just felt really good about it. Taking my recitations to the next level. So.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I just passed 21,000.
This is like, woohoo! Well done. That's a good milestone, 21,000.
So I did have, I think back in November, I sort of set my goal that I was going to do 105 or 5 times 21 or yep. But now I'm doing 360 on average.
A day.
So there you go.
So it's just gone up. That's good.
Yeah, I think the retreat, it just became easier to set, to dedicate more time to it.
Yeah, so once you get the momentum started, yeah, then you keep going with the momentum, and but clearly you've made time as well in your day to do it. No, that's okay. Actually, Geshe Zopa would really approve of that, because he's often said being slow to start, or seeming like, you know, you're not blitzing it, is actually much more sustainable. And that people that dive in really, really hard and really, really fast, you can't keep it up like that. Somehow you've got to slow down and be able to integrate it, otherwise you burn out. If you keep going hard and fast like that, you'll just go in and go out the other end to see you later. So it's okay, a slow start is okay. And you're a go in 100 miles at 0 to 100 in 3 seconds flat kind of person. Mm-hmm. How are you going with that?
I am not good, not having your time. No, I did go really hard at the start, but I was only doing 21 a day. And then it's just like the whole practice has just fallen off the wagon. So the mornings are fine. I do my little morning thing. But exactly what you said, if you go too hard at the start, it's harder to
Keep it going, yeah.
So I was like really like hard, proper morning practice, proper evening practice, like a whole bunch of stuff. And now I just can't keep it up. So I've had to pare back.
Yeah. So please don't feel bad about having to pare back. If you've gone hard, you've done a really concerted effort to get started. So if you're paring it back, don't feel as if it's something wrong or it's no good. Just think it's the next stage. You consolidate that. But that's the nice thing about doing a retreat every now and again, is that it just gives you a boost. And so if I didn't have these retreats, or if I didn't have 13 hours on a train, then I wouldn't have any boost at all. So, but that's okay. And I think it's mostly because translating the momentum into the depth is hard, because the momentum gets us started, but then it's going to naturally change. So try and get more of the depth in, like the stories, really flesh it out, spend some time on the just kind of almost daydreaming on the visualization and things like that, so that it stays a rich experience, even if it's shorter. I've noticed this trick that if I take my, I've put sparkles on my counter, so I've got my daily clicker counter, and then I've got a phone thing, and it's full of sparkles. So I have it I can put it on my wrist now, and so if I'm shopping, I have this in my hand, and I tell you what, I do not impulse buy. It is so excellent, it's so good, and I buy less crap food at the supermarket as well. Multiple benefits, you know, from here all the way to enlightenment, but also here too. So yeah, whatever it takes. I needed something sparkly to go, ooh.
I got also something sparkly. So when I transfer it, I usually use these white ones, and then I transfer it onto the
sparkly one. Sparkly. Yeah. As the reward, transfer from the daily to the sparkly one. Yeah. Even if you're struggling to do the 21, just do them while you're doing the dishes or the shower. Just take a long shower and do them in the shower. Don't feel bad about it. Just enjoy it. But the shower in particular is fantastic for Vajrasattva. So that, you know, once you have that experience of, especially if it's been a stinging hot day and you have the cool water on your head, that experience will then translate to the cushion. I mean, the first milestone is when you hit 1,000, okay? And then I wanted to get up to 10,000 by the end of the year, but didn't quite get there. But I did get there in January, thanks to delayed train travel. Woohoo! I got to the stage where I just wake up saying the Vajrasattva mantra. So I'm really happy about that. Once it gets in that deep, that it's automatic and it just becomes your background mantra. Francesca started doing her Vajrasattvas when doing prostrations to the 35 Buddhas, trying to restart accumulating prostrations as well. Oh my gosh. Well done, Francesca, indeed. Oh, laps with prostrations at 42,000 mark. So back to the beginning again. Yeah, well, I mean, it's just going to become a lifestyle, isn't it? Because don't forget, Geshe-la said, once you've done your 100,000, fantastic, you can do another one. Remember? He said, and then I did another one of the refuges, and then I thought, oh, then I'd do another one of the mandalas, so you just keep going. Then he did refuge ones with the tantric refuge, you know, the long prayer, like we do in this Vajrasattva practice. It's just a way of appreciating what you're doing. Right, so there are instructions, Francesca says, in the Gold Prayer Book of how to combine. Yeah, the Gold Prayer Book has really beautiful instructions for the visualization as well. Stacey's pulled back a bit, starting to feel it's a bit of a chore. But I know, Stacey, you inspired me because you were doing so many every day, and I'm just like, oh my God, do you have a doppelganger or something? How on earth are you getting this done? Pull back the number, but deepen the experience. It's good to notice if it's beginning to be like a chore and stop that and bring some joy back, because there's nothing that's going to kill off your Dharma practice more than thinking it's a chore. And the moment we're thinking like that, I don't know whether we've just brought in worldly concerns or Judeo-Christian detritus or something, but it's not how the Dharma is. Instead of kind of beating ourselves up, we've got to find the joy again, however we do it. So I find it actually in music. So music is something that reboots me, and then I end up doing the Vajrasattva practice in the middle of the concert and everything's okay again. So it's something that's going to make you feel alive and kind of filled in. Oh yes, the deadline changed. So normally we'd be aiming to do it in a year, but because this year is Guru Bumsog, Geshe's Opus coming, and that means that we've got an extra year because we'll offer our Vajrasattva Nondro in 2027. I calculated how long it would take me to do if I kept going at the pace that I'm doing, and it's about 12 years. So clearly I have to up the pace a little bit. Oh yeah, so Rosemary, if you finished your refuge recitations, then you can offer them to Geshe-la. So when he comes in September, you can put it in a little card and you can offer them to him. It'd be really lovely. Best case scenario is to do 21 and the little booklet in the morning, and then just random Vajrasattvas, and then 21 and the little booklet at night. That's what I'm aiming at. But sometimes it's just 21 and the little booklet at night, and then I wake up halfway through it and like, uh-oh, I've fallen asleep again. So then I do it while I'm brushing my teeth. I mean, I'm just hanging on there. But probably hanging on there without feeling guilty, which is really different from years ago. Anyway, being on holiday, when we had our break, you know, the whole thing about having a break is to get new eyes, isn't it? To get a different perspective of things and do the meta-analysis. And so I thought I'd just share with you a little bit of how I put it together, because I think this, just personally, this Vajrasattva practice, it's really different from the Refuge Nondro. The Refuge Nondro was blissful and inspiring, as it should be, because it's about nurturing. Vajrasattva is about cleansing. And so one of the classic things that happens is that we do the practice and then the shit hits the fan, pretty much. But that's what's happening, because we're experiencing the karmic results in a very diluted form, rather than having to experience them in the lower realms or in an intense form. So it's like we're purifying all of these things, but in just a little diluted experience of it. So something similar to this is often, say, when people become ordained and they have all sorts of accidents. A lot of the nuns, they get ordained, they get sick, they have an accident, they have blah, 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 one after the other, and it's just like massive purification. So with the Vajrasattva, it's like we've been having massive purification. And so I looked back over the last few months and I'm thinking, actually, it's like I'm going through the 10 non-virtuous actions, because the first thing that happened to me was having food poisoning, which was literally expelling downward washing in a very dramatic way. I kid you not. You know, the sickness and kind of threat to your life is a purification of killing. And so it was a way of kind of going, living through killing karma without having to go to the lower realms. But also the wonderful thing about that was that with food poisoning, your body just takes over and does it itself. But it's a natural process of eliminating toxins, and your body naturally does it. So what Vajrasattva practice is doing is like kind of harnessing this process, the natural process of expelling toxins as a spiritual thing. We're doing exactly the same thing. So really, it's a really powerful process that we can trust is actually working. And so then also what happened to me last year was my partner of 28 years left me. And so that was another thing. That's like, I know a lot of people were shocked, but more so people were shocked because they didn't know we were together, let alone that we'd split up. But again, it was like in a really diluted form, because in effect, nothing's changed. Eddie still teaches here, I'm still here, we still talk about classes, the only thing we're interested in is Dharma, we still crack jokes, and really it's just that we don't get to see each other as much. You know, again, I was thinking, oh, okay, so that's the whole section, sexual misconduct section of all of those things ripening as losing your partner, done, but done in this really almost good way. And then, just before we opened, Lumbri Tumpa Centre was burgled. So this is the third one of the three physical actions, killing, stealing, sexual misconduct. So again, not when we were burgled, it was like, I feel so grateful to our burglars, because they didn't break anything. They just broke the till. They just took money. They emptied out all the cupboards in the Gompa, but they didn't break anything, not even tiny little things. They just emptied everything out looking for money. Didn't touch any of the holy objects, didn't smash. There's someone that's really fraught. So I feel really sad for someone who's clearly got respect for Dharma but is burgling a Dharma center. Like, I do see where they're coming from, and then I'm just so profoundly grateful that they gave us a wake-up call. So there you have killing, sexual misconduct, and stealing. But again, it's like a karmic result. It's a group result, this one. Very diluted, and happened in the best possible way. And then there was this metaphor that brought it all together, because when I came back, the night that I came back, because I was away when the burglary happened, Venerable Lhasam was here. She was in one room and I was the other, and she called me on her phone and said, oh, Miffy, there's a snake in the foyer. I'm like, wah! I am scared of snakes. So I peeked my head around the corner of the door to look, and she's right there in the foyer in her bare feet going, I think I can get it out, but I'm not sure if it's a snake or if it's a legless lizard. And I'm like, how big is it? She said, probably, you know, this big. And I'm like, I'm not even coming in the room. So we called the snake catcher guy. Of course, it's behind 15 boxes in the foyer. And so the guy, it was a 45 centimeter legless lizard, had tiny little legs. But it could have been a black snake, right? Both black, both wiggle. So he was really nice, and he said, thank you for not squishing it. And then he said, yeah, it looks like a snake, but no venom. And I thought, that's what the burglary was. It was like a burglary, but no venom. And so if these kind of things are happening to you, don't worry. Try and see if they fit into this like bigger Dharma context. Because now that I'm looking at it, and that I was on holiday to get the big picture rather than just so like head down into your life. I just like to do the ones from Lama Zopa Rinpoche or Lama Yeshe, just because there is the Vajrasattva book that directly corresponds with it. And because we are in this lineage of Rinpoche's, this one, the little booklet. So the Haruka Vajrasattva is unique to the Gelug tradition. So other traditions have solitary Vajrasattva. This one's a really special, unique practice to the Gelug, the highest yoga tantra version. And so I think it's important, since we've had that initiation, that we actually do that practice together. It's best just to do the long mantras, because that's our commitment for Nongdros, is the long mantras. You can, if you want, do 28 of the short mantras, but then you can't count those as dro. What makes it Haruka Vajrasattva is its highest yoga tantra, Vajrasattva. Vajrasattva practices in all of the practices. So Vajrasattva is like the purifying aspect of any Buddha. And so this one, Haruka Vajrasattva, is based on Haruka practice. When you do Nyungne, you do Pema Sattva, which is in the nature of Amitabha, and it's to do with the Chenrezig practice. That sometimes that's why the mantra changes as well. When you do, as you'll notice in various pujas, we do Vajrasattva at the end. So it's the Vajrasattva aspect of Tara, or the Vajrasattva aspect of Manjushri, or you know, whatever practice that you're doing. Even in Kala Chakra, that's right, Kala Chakra, the purification aspect of Kala Chakra is Vajrasattva. It's for if we make any mistakes in that practice, that's why we do the mantra at the end of any practice or at the end of any puja. But in this booklet, how this just absolutely heartwarming sentence where it says, Vajrasattva is my root guru, the holy mind of all the Buddhas, the Dharmakaya, so that innate purity, who out of his unbearable compassion, which embraces me and all other sentient beings, appears in this form to help purify us. So Vajrasattva is that innate purity, the Dharmakaya, appearing in this form specifically to help us purify. And the Haruka Vajrasattva practice is based on the Haruka, it's part of the bigger, you know, Haruka practice. And so that's why in the retreat, sometimes one lot of the Christmas retreat, we had Haruka as our main refuge object to start with. At the beginning of the sadhana, it said you could have Haruka or you could have Vajradhara. So we've done one retreat with Vajradhara and one with Haruka. When it's mother and father, Vajrasattva, that's a highest yoga tantra practice. And whether it's when it's solitary Vajrasattva, that's lower tantra practice. So this is the highest yoga tantra practice, and it's unique to the Gelug tradition. And also what's unique to the Gelug tradition is where Vajrasattva's hands are. So you'll see the, just getting the left and the right.
Oh, it just does me in.
The hand that's holding the bell, Vajrasattva's left hand is down and the Vajra is up. So that's the one that's unique to the Gelug tradition. In other traditions, the Vajrasattva is like this, crossed over. You will see the images are slightly different.